There's a lot of great technology, a lot of great talent, but in the end, there are very few great strategies. And the handful of companies and leaders that figure out, how do I think systematically about solving a problem and bundling it in a way that nobody else can do? Those are the guys that win.
Welcome to Supply Chain Now, the number one voice of supply chain. Join us as we share critical news, key insights, and real supply chain leadership from across the globe. One conversation at a time.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Scott Luton and Wiley Jones here with you on Supply Chain Now. Hey, Wiley, how are you doing today?
I am doing super well. Happy Friday, Scott.
Happy Friday. And you know what? Happy and one of the best Fridays of the year because we've got a big show here today on Supply Chain Now as we continue a popular newer series for 2026, Enterprise Unleashed, powered by Wiley and all of our innovative friends at DOS. It focuses and really dials in on real leadership conversations with individuals that have demonstrated a proven track record for truly unleashing the beast, the power of the enterprise, liberating their people, their operations, and their performance from old-fashioned technologies and approaches from the past, all driving innovation and change across industry. And today, Wiley, we are offering a new twist on this critical theme. Backed by popular demand, it's been too long. We're featuring this extraordinary investor, advisor, and entrepreneur that is well known throughout global supply chain. We're going to be gaining his unique insights into a variety of topics to include from what organizational characteristics that drive scale to what sectors are attracting tons of investment. We're even going to crank up the crystal ball and project what lies ahead, all this and much, much more. And Wiley, we've had one heck of a start with this series. I think this is our fourth installment of Enterprise Unleashed. Are you ready for today's episode, my friend?
I'm ready to rock. I'm excited to talk maybe some Beatles, maybe some supply chain, some AI and automation.
You're always ready for it. You're like the Energizer Bunny, I think, or Duras, whoever, whatever battery had the, you're always ready. You never miss a beat. And I'm looking forward to learning from you and our guest. With no further ado, I want to get to work and welcome in our featured guest here today. Folks, Benjamin Gordon is founder and managing partner of Cambridge Capital. He draws regularly on career building, advising, and investing in supply chain companies. Ben has led investments in outstanding firms like XPO, Grand Junction, Bring, Lift It, and others. Prior to Cambridge Capital, Ben built BGSA Holdings into a global leader in M&A for the supply chain sector. As CEO of BGSA, Ben led the firm's efforts, advising on over, get this, over $2 billion worth of supply chain transactions. Prior to BGSA Holdings, Ben founded 3Plex, the internet solution enabling third-party logistics companies to automate their business. It's important to note that Ben is also an active civic leader who is committed to giving back to the community. For example, as founder and chairman of Gesture City, he boosted young adult volunteerism, expanding the organization to over 100,000 members in 20 locations. Dang. Ben also serves on a wide variety of boards and leadership committees. Please join me in welcoming Ben Gordon, founder and managing partner of Cambridge Capital. Hey, hey, Ben, how you doing, my friend?
Outstanding, Scott. Great to see you and great to see Wiley. Thank you.
Well, Wiley, if I read word for word Ben's entire background, we might not get out of here for 6 hours. So I kind of had to cherry pick it a bit, but we're pretty excited about today's conversation, huh? And I want to start with this, Ben. It was good to reconnect in the green room, as Wiley referenced, and we learned a little bit about you. We learned that you've recently won the Masters. Tell us about that, Ben.
Well, it's not the Masters. I wasn't in Augusta, and it didn't involve a golf club, but triathlon Masters, which means the fastest old guy. So my midlife crisis, Scott and Wiley, was triathlons. And it could have been a lot worse, right? Think about all the alternatives. I live in Florida. I mean, you know, there's no cocaine or hookers or other bad habits. So it was reading biographies, playing guitar in triathlons. And so I've been amping it up. Took a break. I was on the DL for a little bit, dealing with a knee injury. And last month, the day before a big triathlon, a friend of mine who's the race organizer, his name is Bill, he said, "Ben, why aren't you signed up for my race?" I said, "No, Bill, I'm injured. I'm recovering. I've got a wedding tonight. I don't want to wake up at 5 a.m. and do this." He said, "God damn it. I'm counting on you. You got to do it." So I rallied. I got up at 5 a.m. did the race, and miraculously, I ended up as the fastest old guy, hence the Masters first place finish. So just goes to show that, as I think the Jimmy Buffett slogan goes, growing older, but not up.
Love that. There's so much I want to follow up on there, Ben. But Wiley, hey, I got to get my act together and start running some triathlons and catch up with Ben here, maybe win some kind of category. But Wiley, that's a bit inspiring already, huh?
Well, I was going to say, I was like, that's a good slogan for a midlife crisis. Is instead of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, it's swim, cycle, and run, right?
There you go.
That is right. Let's do this. We got a lot to get to. And I want to start with, you know, your family had a transportation business earlier in your upbringing. So between that and, of course, your first startup, Threeplex is probably how you say it. Threeplex, right, Ben?
You got it. Yeah.
So supply chain runs really deep in your roots. Tell us more about that.
Well, listen, humble roots, right? My great-grandfather on one side came over steerage class on a boat from Russia when he was 15. And then on the other side of my family, so that's a form of transportation, albeit pretty meager. And then on the other side, great-grandfather started a horse and buggy business in New York in 1903 called Morgan Stern Express. Mm. And so, and then his grandson, my grandfather, started a truck leasing company called AMI. And so then two generations later, there I was in 99 with the idea to start one of their first internet logistics companies, a SaaS TMS, which is Threeplex. So you can trace that back many generations, and here we are today.
Ben, that's outstanding. And Wiley, I'm already learning some new stuff about Ben Gordon, and I thought I knew him. But the roots have continued to deliver for industry, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, as you described, the horse and buggy TMS of the 1903 timeframe. They probably needed something pretty similar back then, but they didn't have the means. So that's awesome to see that through line.
It is. And it reminds me of R.D. Dismook at Modex told me, hey, we can't win the modern technology, supply chain technology race by taking a 1985 horse and buggy approach. Artie, I hope you're tuned in here listening to Ben and Wiley. Really quick, I'm going to ask you about some of your work with, of course, BGSA in Cambridge. But hey, Regine says the fastest old guy. That sounds like a perfect trophy title. Love that. Osvaldo tuned in from Angola via LinkedIn. Great to see you. And Sabash says, hey, it's been about 25 years since you first Sabash first mentioned. Tell you what, blessed be eyes that mind. So, Ben, we're going to touch probably more on BGSA in Cambridge towards the end of today's episode. But first, especially for context, tell us more about your work with both BGSA Holdings and Cambridge Capital.
They're separate but related businesses. And the principle is, if you're a CEO building a great company, you might want advice on mergers, acquisitions, capital raise, or other transactional work. And that's what BGSA does. Okay. BGSA specializes in providing investment banking services for top CEOs in transportation, logistics, and the supply chain world, and has been doing so since 2002. Okay. So nearly 25 years. If you want a capital partner for growth, you know, whether that's to buy you out or to buy a component and then provide growth resources or to fund acquisitions, technology investments, or otherwise, well, that's Cambridge Capital. It's a private equity firm. Cambridge is all about backing the best CEOs, building the best businesses in supply chain. We've been doing that since 2010. We're early investors in XPO with Brad Jacobs in 2011, among others. And so really the principle is advisory side, principal side, all based on giving great CEOs the resources they need to succeed.
Ben, that's impressive. And really the longevity of it all is really impressive. You've seen a lot through those the different markets that represent those 25, 30 years. All right, so Wiley, speaking of which, we're going to dive a little deeper into the unique position that Ben sits in. Where are we going next, Wiley?
I think the big thing that, especially having attended your conference a couple of times now, that I love getting your point of view on is that you see so many different reference frames and slices of the industry as a capital allocator, as someone who's helping and advise on both sides of transactions, someone who's operated these companies, family lineage of operating these companies. What are the things that are top of mind for you across, you know, BGSA Holdings, Cambridge Capital? Like, what is happening in the market from a technology standpoint, but as well as where the operators are then focusing that technology? What are the big things that you've seen and observed that have really come to the forefront in recent recent months?
Well, I think at least three things come to mind. The first is macroeconomics, because we're all part of this much bigger economic cycle. And so in the freight world, we have just ended the longest, deepest, and worst freight recession in U.S. history. It was a four-year recession. Freight rates on average dropped over 50%, particularly in truck, you know, drive-in truckload. Record bankruptcies on the trucking side, truck brokerage side, and other collateral damage. That meant that if you were a trucker, you went through pain, a truck broker, you went through pain. But also if you were a service provider to the industry, there were ripple effects from that as well. That freight recession is now over. We are now seeing rates skyrocket. We're seeing growth come back. The unit volume is not moving up as much as the pricing, but nevertheless, it's clear that we're in a next chapter. So I think topic number one is the volatility in the freight cycles and what that means for the entire ecosystem. Topic number two is technology. You can't read the newspaper or really anything without being aware of what's happening in AI. But there are a few really big things happening in AI as it relates to supply chain. At our conference, for example, and Wiley, you know this because you were there, we have the BGSA Supply Chain Shark Tank, which is a spotlight on innovation. We've been doing that for about 8 years. This year, there were over 60 applicants. I think 52 of them were some flavor of AI, whether it was AI for workflow automation or some other component. Now, they're not all going to win, but the market need and opportunity for AI and supply chain is tremendous. And you could break that down into workflow automations, using AI to automate the sequence of steps that a truck broker or a freight forwarder or another transportation company goes through. There's AI for pricing and analytics, using AI to process massive data sets, $30, $40 billion of freight, to be able to make better analytical decisions. And then third, there's the opportunity to use AI to make sense of other bigger pools of data, including unstructured data. And that's kind of a frontier. So I think headline one, freight recession's over. We're now in the next chapter. Headline two, AI, and it really does change everything. And there are lots of huge winners. There are also like going to be lots of huge losers, because if you don't know how to use these tools and your competitors do, you know, it's inevitable that they're going to win and you're going to lose. And in some respects, it is absolutely a highly competitive zero-sum game. And then I think the third big thing is M&A, okay? We're seeing a lot of M&A activity right now, and that's because I think companies are responding to the fact that their customers want more, better, different things. As an example, BGSA, the investment bank, just sold a company called Idelic, which is really software that's focused on driver safety and compliance. That is interesting in its own right, probably more interesting today than it was a month ago because of the Supreme Court 9-0 ruling on liability for brokers, which makes it that much more important to have a safety and compliance protocol. But you know, that company was acquired by Descartes. And of course, Descartes, terrific company, public company, $10 billion plus business, and they are actively consolidating different parts of the supply chain software world as they look to automate more and more of the process. But similarly, you see other consolidators in other pockets of supply chain, e-com fulfillment, warehousing, truck brokerage, freight forwarding, et cetera.
That's awesome. Yeah. So mirroring that back, we're in the back half of the roaring 20s now. We're on the upswing out of our great freight depression. There is workflow automation with AI that we're seeing, unstructured data analysis across wide, you know, corpuses of data that has never been possible before. And then we're seeing a bunch of consolidation from larger market players, but even in, you know, maybe places in mid-market where people are looking on the other side of the transaction.
Corpuses. That's a great word, Wiley. So Wiley, I bet you're curious to double click on AI is my hunch.
Unfortunately, yes. So I think the piece here that I'm most interested on this, Ben, is that you have seen, again, as you described, the transformative changes where technical innovation occurs that came in the internet revolution, late 90s, when you were introducing Threeplex. Where are you seeing AI deliver the most practical value in the supply chain today?
Great question. So I think the number one application is in workflow. And that's because logistics, as you know, and as I'm sure everybody in the audience knows, is a complicated multi-step process. And there's just a lot there. And whether it's automating the sequence of steps that a truck broker goes through in the life of an order, or when a carrier goes through, or a shipper, or anybody else in the supply chain process, there are a lot of steps. And if you could take out more steps and take out more costs, there are all kinds of benefits that could accrue to you. So here's an example. Pallet is AI-powered workflow. Cambridge Capital invested in a company called Everest, a truck brokerage business, great company, great people, does a great job, serves large major brands, went through the same pain and suffering that everybody in the truck brokerage world did over the course of this freight recession. Now, it's a well-run company, great service, great technology, great capabilities. But in a world where you've got margin compression, on average, truck brokerage gross margins in 2021 and 2022 were close to 20%. By contrast, by 2025, those average margins for the industry had collapsed by 50%, down to 10%. And that, again, that's true for everybody. You can look at public data. It's not identical company to company, but you know, you could look at RXO, or when Echo was public, the Echo data, or C.H. Robinson. And then you can look at data that companies like Green Screens published and others, and you'll see this. Amidst this massive margin compression, what do? You can't just say, oh, I'm going to do the same thing faster. You've got to find ways to be materially different and better. Everest brought in Pallet. Pallet is using AI to really automate the entire process. And the idea is, map all the steps and you say, okay, if I've got 100 steps, can I automate half of them? And then for the other half, can I use technology to allow the key people that do a great job be able to do more with less, so that maybe with the same size team, you could do double the revenue or triple the revenue? And that is exactly what the Pallet technology is helping Everest to do. And so the net effect of that is Everest wins because Everest can respond to the market dynamic and be able to still succeed despite the market challenges that I've just described and be more efficient and more effective. The Everest customers win because the customers gain the benefit from a team that could be more focused on service instead of doing commodity things that you could use technology to do better. Pallet wins because, of course, Pallet is gaining revenue and a satisfied customer and all the ripple effects that flow from that. You know, in the end, it is really, it's a triple win by virtue of that. And I think that's a very good example. You can use AI to automate process and workflow in a manner that is transformative. You got to have a strategy for how can I use AI to take out process steps and be able to do more with less.
All right. So Wiley, we've got 3,427 more questions I want to pose to Ben while we got him. But quickly respond, Wiley, to that great case example, to Ben's point, that triple winner. The team wins, the financials win, the ecosystem wins from an innovative approach.
Yeah, I mean, that is, I think, the triple threat that we see with any technical innovation that happens at the most foundational layer, is that it is net sum positive for almost everyone. You subtract out the pain and suffering and you grow revenue. One kind of like immediate, super quick question back to Ben on this is a fundamental thing that management teams will ask me a lot is, do they see most benefits from workflow automation in the team being able to grow revenue as a result of doing more with less? Or are they more focused on saying, how can we improve margin by taking the thing that we're already doing and use less energy, effort, people, time, et cetera, to do it? Where do you see most of the benefit, especially in the world of logistics? Where do they see most of that coming from?
The answer is both. But in particular, if you are a company that's growing and successful, and maybe you are going to grow 20% this year, maybe with AI, you could do a better job. Maybe you could grow 30%, 40%, and maybe you could do so without having to add cost. So if you could use the same team, but be able to produce more, great, you win, everybody wins. Now, in the beginning of my career, I was a strategy consultant. There was a book that we had published nearly 30 years ago titled, You Can't Shrink Your Way to Greatness. It's as true now as it was then. You can't shrink your way to greatness. So can you use AI to take out some costs? Yes. And does that mean that if you're running a company, you ought to be able to do it to improve your margin? Yes. But you can't shrink your way to greatness. It's got to be a tool for being able to grow. And I think smart, successful companies, and certainly would put Everest in that camp, are using it as a tool for growth as well.
Great. Still true, except for semiconductors. Still true, though.
I literally had those exact words in my head, Scott. I was like, well, chips. But yeah.
Other than that, it's universal. I love it. What a great t-shirtism. You can't shrink yourself to shrink your way to greatness. I want to ask you this, Ben. How much of enterprise value today comes down to leadership quality and operational discipline versus pure technological differentiation?
Well, I think it has to start with leadership. I mean, it's interesting. I remember when you think about some of the great technology companies that have been built along the way. So here's a good vintage reference. There was a company called Lotus, pioneer making the spreadsheets, you know, Lotus 1-2-3. And before there was Excel, there was Lotus. And in the end, Lotus sold in the late 90s. And somebody asked Bill Gates about it and said, Lotus isn't a strategy, it's just a product. The reason why that was such a great line then, and it resonates now as I think about your question, is Bill Gates had a strategy, right? Lotus had a product, which is, okay, the spreadsheet. But Bill Gates figured out, I can bundle these different capabilities together. I could have Microsoft Word, Microsoft Excel, Internet Explorer. Of course, that bundle gave him a competitive advantage, so powerful that in the end, the court system had to break it up. But it just shows the difference between a product and a strategy. So to me, the answer is it's leadership, and that leadership starts with a clear point of view. And this is so important in supply chain right now, because when you think about all the competition, for example, the AI workflow example and the 50 plus applicants to the BJSA Supply Chain Shark Tank. Okay, there's a lot of great technology, a lot of great talent, but in the end, there are very few great strategies. And the handful of companies that and leaders that figure out, how do I think systematically about solving a problem and bundling it in a way that nobody else can do? Those are the guys that win. And if you look at, for example, the giants of value creation and supply chain, WiseTech, for example, WiseTech got started because Richard White figured out how to map a really complex workflow, which was for global freight forwarding, and how to automate it using software. And there were people doing different things, but nobody said, I'm going to automate everything end-to-end in the freight forwarding arena, and then made a string of acquisitions to fill in the gap. So to me, that starts with leadership, with vision, and with the desire to do something that nobody else could do in the same way.
Outstanding. Okay, Wiley, I'm going to go one more question, then I'm going to circle back and get your conversation. And who knows, Lexus, Lotus, what's coming next? Maybe formerly LlamaSoft, who knows where we're going next? What operational characteristics consistently show up? I mean, you've got an incredible track record here. You've seen the companies built to win and to scale, and some that have tried and haven't. But what are some of the common threads in terms of operational characteristics that show up in those companies that do scale successfully?
I'm going to go to the godfather of supply chain value growth, and that's Brad Jacobs. Brad Jacobs came to our conference, just like Wiley did, in 2010. Brad Jacobs had been a very successful guy by then, but he hadn't done something in our sector. He'd built United Waste and United Rentals. And he came up to me and he said, you don't know me, but I built four companies from nothing to over a billion, and my next one's going to be in logistics. Everybody said, I got to come to this conference and I got to meet you. And so what do I need to know? It was sort of explain the Bible while I stand on one foot. But we had a great conversation. And the takeaway was focus on large, growing, fragmented markets. Truck brokerage is a great place to start. Famously, Brad went and bought Express One. That $70 million value company would grow to become a $20 billion value company within a decade. The acquisitions were only a part of it. The operational excellence, as you're alluding to now, was equally important. And we had the opportunity to talk with Brad while he heard it at our conference. I got to have a one-on-one kind of deal talk, strategy talk, life talk with him, which was fascinating. I learned so much, and I know everybody did. Business conference, at the end of which Brad got a standing ovation, which this is not like a Taylor Swift conference. Why is that? Well, part of it was because he was very authentic and transparent about this question that you're asking right now. So operational excellence. One of the things that Brad did was crowdsourcing agendas for meetings after you buy a company. He's got 10,000 new employees. What happens? Well, a lot of times your typical CEO comes in and says, I'm going to give you, my vision and, give you the speech, give you the talk and try to get you fired up and let's go. Okay, Brad had a different approach, which is I want to know what everybody cares about, and I also want them to feel listened to. He'd have somebody send an email to the entire company and say, tell me the issues that are on your mind. So he's got a list. Then there would be a second email that said, now I want you to force rank these and tell me which ones matter the most to you. So he has crowdsourced an agenda that becomes the basis for that meeting, for that conversation. That in and of itself is valuable because it means he's getting better ideas. He's listening to people on the front lines and he's focusing on what they care about. But then there's a second advantage, and that is, you know, we're all human. We like to feel listened to. We're more engaged. We're more excited. We work harder and we perform better when we know that we're working with someone and for someone that listens to us, values us, and cares about us. So, you know, you not only get to better ideas, but you get a more engaged workforce. And so that's just one very specific example of how operational excellence can come from something that when you hear it, you probably think, gee, that sounds obvious. Of course I would do that. But most companies don't do that. And you could take that same approach to all aspects of running the business.
Excellent. Ben, we could be here all day talking, I think, on your last response. But Wiley, really quick. Number one, I look forward to my invite to the Cool Kids Club, Ben. So I'll write you a letter this time next year. We'll see if we can't make that happen. Number two, Wiley, you were talking about this specific address in the green room and how what Brad shared, what Ben's describing, you think about like once a day or once a week. And it touches on Wiley, one big time common thread through all four of the conversations here of Enterprise Unleashed, culture, the power of intentional culture. But respond to what you heard there from Ben.
Yeah, there were probably 3 to 4 sentences that Brad, you know, verbalized in that discussion with you that I think about on a weekly basis. But the thing you just touched on that was the most interesting part of his discussion with you in that fireside was that he went from this metaphysical, you know, really big picture, 10x your ambition, 10x your goals discussion. The CEO comes into a company they buy and they get everybody fired up. He went from that and then he bottomed out into the tactics instantly. His ability to switch from the strategic high level into tactical rigor and excellence, like he was flipping a switch. And he was like, here is exactly how I will collect information from the team members. Here is exactly how we will validate which people actually fit into the new culture we're trying to build. Here's the toxic parts of the culture that we need to systematically carve out. Here is how I go in and find all that. Here, you know, it was like watching a maestro. And I was like, oh, this is different. There's like something special here where you watch someone operate at such a high wavelength and then they drop down into this like very deep, rigorous operational frame. And like that really clicked for me, was like, this is what excellence looks like when you observe it like a couple times and you see people like, you know, Brad or the way they think and the way that they operate. I was like, oh, okay, this is why you get, as you said, the $70 million, you know, company grow to $20 billion. And he doesn't, not once, but he does it like 4 times.
It's remarkable. Maybe we get Brad next on Enterprise Unleashed. Brad and Ben and Wiley. Oh my gosh, I'll get a Diet Coke and popcorn to watch. All right. So Ben, I got a 2-part question as we kind of wrap up this enterprise value segment in the conversation. So number one, we're in this interesting time. Volatile market doesn't do it justice, but I'm going to go with that descriptor right now. In volatile markets in general, what's the most important trait? You know, profitability, resilience, adaptability, experience. So that's the first question. And then secondly, regardless of what market we're in, the more predictable, the more volatile, whatever descriptors you want to use, what's one of the biggest mistakes you've seen founders and leadership teams make when trying to scale? Ben, what'd you say?
All right, well, let's start with your first question. So in volatile markets, what's the thing that matters most? You've got to have one thing that you're great at that people can count on you for. So I mean, I'll give you an example. Green screens, AI-powered predictive pricing for trucking. So when I first met Felix, who was the real founder, put in years and millions of dollars of his own money and time and effort, you know, getting the business started, creating a terrific technology team. But they were doing at least 6 different things at once, including a digital truck brokerage capability, sort of a convoy-like business, and a series of other products. One of my mentors, who I've always found super helpful, likes to say, simplify, focus, execute. This business was doing too many things. You got to simplify. What's the one thing that mattered the most? In the case of green screens, what they had that was special above and beyond, I mean, there were other digital brokers. And in the end, I think we all learned that digital brokerage as a business model is a tough business to really turn into something great. But having one master database with more pricing data than anybody and the ability to use AI to detect patterns and ultimately to be able to tell you on a real-time basis, what should it cost to ship a truckload of freight from LA to Miami right now? How's that likely to be different on Monday at 10 a.m. or Tuesday at 4 p.m.? And factoring into account everything, you know, whether it's trade patterns or weather issues or carrier networks or anything else, having one huge data set and one powerful set of algorithms that in the end everybody uses, that was a really valuable thing. So when we looked at all the different areas, to me, the question was, well, what's the one thing that we could do better than anybody else? And it was that. And with all the volatility in the freight markets over the 2020 to 2025 timeframe, the reason green screens succeeded was because they were doing that one thing really well. Now, green screens had competitors, but nobody was doing the one thing that green screens was focused on 100%. That gave green screens an advantage in its market that allowed green screens to succeed. And then of course, you know, the third part, execute. Well, one thing that we figured out was you lose companies when implementations take too long. By the way, you also lose money when they take too long because usually they don't want to pay you, whether your contract allows you to build them or not. Nobody wants to pay you before the system is on. So we looked at the question of how long does it take from when you sign the contract with a customer to when they're 100% operating, and how do we squeeze that down as much as possible? And if you could take 90 days to 60 to 30 to 10 days, you get paid faster, your customer's happier, there's less risk of churn, you're using your own time more efficiently. There's this great flywheel. So in the end, simplify, focus, execute, and in times of volatility like right now, those principles are more valuable than ever.
You know, what's old is new again. You know, there's these timeless principles, I think, regardless of markets, Ben, and one of them is certainly the focus is so undervalued across industry, and it's very powerful, as Ben just shared. Okay, so Wiley, we got so much more to get to with Ben. I'm going to pass the baton to you, Wiley. I bet you want to comment on what you heard there from Ben. Go right ahead. But we also want to get into the current investment landscape and share Ben's perspective with our SCN Global fam.
Two sides of this coin. I'll make a nice segue out of it. Focus, focus, focus. Simplify and then focus. I love that. After we end this at 10 a.m. sharp PT, I am going to copy and paste that and send it to my leadership team. So I joke with our team that I've been walking around our conference rooms. If you guys are Lord of the Rings fans, I've been walking around with the Eye of Sauron as a poster. And not because, you know, I think he's a great guy and all, but because the eye can only look at one thing.
I was with you if it was a Star Wars or a Star Trek or maybe even a MacGyver reference, but I got to admit, I haven't watched one episode of Lord of the Rings, Wiley. I'm missing big things, I guess.
Yeah, for any of our Lord of the Rings fans, even the Dark Lord of Mordor can only look at one thing at a time, right?
I love it.
And
makes sense.
And so, you know, with that, you know, turning that over, when you're thinking about that exact same kind of focus in the investment landscape, where are you focusing? Because as you said, there are 60 companies that come through the BGSA Shark Tank, and there will be consolidation among them. There will be winners that emerge. But more importantly, there are ideas that are more correct than others. So where do you feel like you want to be spending your time and focusing? And where do you think that the investment landscape should be focusing with respect to where new technology companies are pushing value into the supply chain?
At Cambridge Capital, we invest in tech companies. We also invest in services companies. So on the tech side, we want companies that are solving a real problem that have real proof points of success and that are winners. How do you know that? Well, you know that not just because the technology is good, but because there's customer adoption. So I always want to see customer case studies. I'd love to see, you know, some major companies where you're able to demonstrate, here's what they did before, here's what their options were, here's why they chose you, and here's what the results were. And if those results are really compelling, and as a result, they not only are doing more with you, but they're also, you know, a great source of recommendations, fantastic. Second thing that to us is important is there's got to be some kind of a moat. Most companies are product companies, not real strategies. and that makes it hard. But a company that could build some kind of a moat, what was interesting about green screens was the opportunity to use data to create a moat, because the more data you had, the more value in your AI-powered predictive pricing, and then turn made you, you know, more and more indispensable to the customer. Well, similarly, if you could figure out how there's something you could bundle so that the combination of things you give your customer is something that makes you indispensable, all the better. But there's got to be some kind of a moat. And then third is tailwinds, right? Like, I mean, we don't want to find the next, you know, the best version of a buggy whip company, right? We want to find the company that's doing something that we know the market wants more of. And so maybe that's, you know, technology for the hyperscalers as they're ramping up, or for healthcare and medical logistics, or some other area where you know there's a large growing problem that is a catalyst for continued growth. And then I think, you know, fourth is the people, which is, and this is one of those things that it's easy to say and it's hard to know, but you want leaders, but you also want leaders that know how to pivot, how to adapt, you know, that be, you know, focused and maybe stubborn where they need to, ruthless about prioritizing that simplify, focus, execute mantra, but they're also good listeners. I mean, Scott, you asked a question earlier, which we didn't end up getting to, about, you know, the biggest mistakes that founders make. To me, the biggest mistake is believing your own bullshit, okay? And that's because every founder, you think about how hard it is when you start a company, okay? You have to simultaneously convince customers you've got a great technology, convince engineers to be able to build something that you think the customers are going to want, but it's not there yet, convince the investors that you have something that's great, that merits funding, convince employees, customers, and others that you have enough capital and enough resources to make it happen. And all those things have to happen at once. And they can't possibly all be completely true at once in the beginning of a company journey. They just can't, right? So founders have to figure out how to scrounge by and accomplish all those things simultaneously. And it's kind of impossible to do. So you got to have that scrappiness and that drive. But then you also have to know, don't believe your own bullshit, because listen, I mean, Steve Jobs had what they called the reality distortion field, where he would tell you something that wasn't true, but he would say it in a way that it was almost like he would will it into being, you know, as the kids say, manifest it, right? So that's fine, you know, and when you're Steve Jobs and you're using the reality distortion field to win customers or recruit people or you know, change direction, fine. But you got to be able to know, you know, when you look in the mirror, is this really 100% true or not? You got to have data and an honest, candid self-assessment to know what's working and what isn't, and then be willing to change or adapt. Because what you think is right is rarely going to be 100% right. As you learn more, you find out more, and you got to be able to adapt, right? And so, you know, as the facts change, does your mind change or not? So really, I mean, those are four critical things that we look for on the tech side. Now, on the services side, we look for all those things too, but a services company is less about having great pure play technology, and it's more about having a great solution for customers. But all that should show up in, and this brings me to the last point, the financial side, which is the unit economics have to be compelling and make sense. For software companies, you know, we are, or AI now, you know, we look at companies that are generally, you know, 5 to 30 million of revenue. And for services companies, you know, it's more like 5 to 30 million of EBITDA. But in both cases, big enough to prove that you've got something that works, and the ability to deploy resources to scale up.
Yeah. One comment on the thing you're describing, and then kind of a follow-up quick question on that. The thing you said about the reality distortion field, I think, is especially interesting. The job of leaders a lot of times is to hold two conflicting ideas in their head at the same time. You have to be extremely high conviction in your ideas because, well, you know, if you're not, then people will tell you no 100 times and you'll actually get discouraged, when you actually can't do that as a person who is going to get told no a lot, especially in the early parts of the journey. On the other end of the spectrum, you have to be able to recognize when the thing that you're going down is this globally not optimal path. And it's what you described as, you know, being able to look in the mirror and say, are unit economics going to be bust forever? You know, yes, we'll get to, you know, $5, $10, $20 million of revenue, but am I actually just digging myself a bigger hole? And those are the things I think are, as you look at quality of leadership, I'm sure that's something that you all are thinking about. And I think about a lot for our own company. The question kind of is like the follow-up on this is, where is capital becoming more skeptical? There's an ability now for us to, you know, lose that simplification and that focus because it feels like so much is now possible. What is the stuff that you're seeing as you're evaluating opportunities on the services and the technology side where you're like, seems great, sounds great, but we're actually not sure?
Well, it's a great question because on the one hand, capital markets could be fickle. On the other hand, as Warren Buffett says, in the short run, the markets are a voting mechanism, but in the long run, they're a waiting mechanism, right? Meaning the short run, popularity could go up and down, but in the long run, the scales, you know, ultimately, you know, bear themselves out. Look, right now, I think tremendous level of volatility. Just look at the public markets. The day there was a publicly traded company that announced that they had figured out how to use AI to massively transform and automate logistics. And all the publicly traded logistics companies tanked. C.H. Robinson dropped 15% that day, which was, I don't know, like $1 billion of value destroyed. Except that the company that made this announcement was a microcap company. I think their value was like 9 or 10 million. And until recently, they'd been a karaoke machine maker. Okay, so like, this was not a credible thing, right? I mean, no more credible than if I came out and declared that I had come up with a cure for cancer. I'd be like, who the hell is Ben Gordon to become the cure for cancer guy? And in the end, you know, the market's figured it out, you know, water finds its level. But I think just highlights that there's a lot of panic, fear, uncertainty, and anxiety about what's happening with AI. One consequence of that is investors are a lot more cautious about businesses that they think could be destroyed by AI. So, you know, that means that, look, legacy software companies doing something that's simple to replicate and expensive, and that maybe Claude comes out with a tool tomorrow that, you know, or skill that automates that, you know, boom, you know, you could be gone. This is the reason why in the public markets over the last 6-7 months, you know, what they call the SaaS apocalypse has happened. And SaaS companies that might have been trading at 20 times revenue, you know, have come down a lot. Now, is all that justified? No, it turns out that some of these things, enterprise software is probably the hardest thing to replicate. You are probably not going to replace SAP or Oracle or Descartes or WiseTech just like that because Claude comes out with a tool or skill. On the other hand, something that's more simple or practical, like, some consumer-facing simple piece of software, workflow or CRM or otherwise, different story, okay? But I think there's a lot of capital market retrenchment around software that they think could be replaced by AI. The other thing that's, I think, worth noting is the Amazon effect. So, for instance, when Amazon announced that they were expanding their supply chain capabilities to go after e-commerce fulfillment, in the immediate term, you know, market prices for e-com fulfillment companies, you know, came down, right? Companies like GXO and others. Then people went back and looked at it more closely and said, okay, well, what Amazon is really going to do is not the same thing as what a GXO does, right? I mean, Amazon will provide a high-scale, low-cost, simple fulfillment service. And if you fit what's in that box, yeah, that's going to be something they will probably do faster, cheaper, and better over time than anybody, you know, as they've done with Amazon Web Services and Amazon Prime and others. But if you're doing something that's more differentiated, more specialized, that requires more service, different story. So I think capital markets kind of, it's like shoot first, ask questions later, right? I mean, so there's kind of broad overreaction in some of these categories. But in the end, if you're doing something that's complex or differentiated or service intensive, there's still a tremendous need for that.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes a ton of sense. I think the degree to which, I think, kind of reading back, the degree to which I would say capital allocators over the long run are thinking about differentiation seems to be at an all-time high.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So as we start to come down the home stretch here, Wiley and Ben. Ben, I hope your crystal ball is working well. Mine's been broken, as I say, for years, but I bet yours, Wiley, my hunch is Ben's has been pretty good for years. But when you think about, let's call it 5 years from now, or if you want to change the time frame, you can do what you want, Ben. 3 years, 10 years, you name it. What do you think is going to define the companies that win and scale versus those companies that don't? And some of them are going to disappear, like Blockbuster or many others that come to mind. Ben, your thoughts?
Well, I think the number one answer is companies that are really good at focusing on the one big thing, simplify, focus, and execute. So Green Screens was great at that one thing, but the reason why it made sense to sell Green Screens to Triumph was because it was a point solution. And so you basically had to say, all right, we're either going to go invest another couple hundred million and build out everything that the target customer, a truck broker, wants and needs, including capacity management and a whole list of other things, or sell to or merge with someone that has those capabilities so that the customer's got everything. Number one is those that do a great job of simplify, focus, execute. Number two, those that are honest and look themselves in the mirror and understand what do I really need to do to be indispensable? And if you can't get there in a clear path, then sell, merge, or find another way to A, unlock value for your shareholders, and B, make sure that the business becomes part of something that's much more sticky, valuable, and indispensable. So I think that's kind of the big thing. The other thing that I would say is be close to the customer and listen and pivot. Find ways to do more, do better. I'll give you an example. We, Cambridge Capital, invested in a company called Moresby, and Moresby does long-tail procurement spend management. The founders were McKinsey guys who were providing procurement services to these Fortune 500 companies. We'll help you buy cheaper, or will help you renegotiate with your existing sourcing partners. And they realized that instead of doing that as a service, as McKinsey consultants, they could build software and do that in a more recurring and scalable fashion for these Fortune 500 companies. So they built this company, Moresby, did a great job powering giants like US Foods, FedEx, and a host of others. We came in, bought a majority stake, combined it with another company called Stat that does another form of spend management and fee reduction. What Stat does is they help large brands reduce the OTIF, on time in full fees, that these brands pay to Walmart and other retailers. Walmart charges over $2 billion a year in OTIF fees, so it's a big deal, big problem. Stat built software and solutions to be able to help these brands do post-audit recovery and can save tens of millions by doing so. But the idea, the insight was put those pieces together, okay? So you've got OTIF and kind of post-audit recovery and long-tail procurement, spend management, and you could give the office of the CFO the ability to provide a holistic way to take down cost, use AI to make better decisions, better analytics. And because you're bundling more capabilities, you're now stickier, you're now more valuable, you're now more indispensable to these CFOs of Fortune 500 companies. And so to me, I think that's an example of the kind of strategic move that I think sets you up for success.
Outstanding. So as we start to wrap here, a couple more questions for Ben and Wiley. I knew that this was going to be a jam up masterclass. All right. So Ben, you've already offered at least 7 chapters of your next book in advice for venture leaders and founders and startups out there. But if you had to pick one piece of advice, and I better know what you're going to say here, we'll see. If you had to pick one piece of final advice to speak to and share with that group, what would that be, Ben?
So it depends on who you are, right? If you're a CEO of a company, you're running a business and supply chain, you're figuring out what do I do amidst this ecosystem, all the volatility, where do I go? I think number one is outside in, okay? Think about what's happening outside you in the market that you can bring in order to help inform your strategy. I think, if you're convinced that what you have is great and better than anybody else and you don't have to listen to or look at the market, you're going to have a harder time. So start with outside in. it's so important to be a voracious reader, consumer of information, whether it's about your direct competitors, your indirect competitors, or the mm-hmm. ecosystem as a whole. And by the way, it's never been easier to find out. I mean, you know, one of the things that I do, you know, we as a firm do with AI. I mean, we run regular reports on not just what's happening with our 8 portfolio companies at Cambridge Capital, but also their competitors and those that are kind of, you know, more indirect. So you know who else is raising capital, who else has made big announcements, who else is, you know, engaged in an M&A transaction, you know, who else has done something newsworthy or noteworthy. And that's important because there's more insight and more to learn based on what's outside your four walls than inside. So I think, like, to me, that's number one. Number two is be willing to make bold decisions. The saying, what got you here won't get you there. It might be that the things that you did that made you successful were vital, but it might also be that we're at a different market. I mean, I don't think it's hyperbole to say that AI creates more opportunity, more volatility, more risk, and, you know, more of everything than ever before. I mean, the thing that everybody in Silicon Valley has been talking about for the last couple of years are tiny teams. And there was a kind of a parlor game and an ongoing bet who would be the first one-man billion-dollar company. And by the way, it looks like the winner is a guy that was profiled in the New York Times last month. One employee, 2 years, built a $1.8 billion revenue company. It's a marketplace for GLP-1s. And so you got to think, well, hell, if that's possible, what else is possible? And so think big, recognize that what got you here won't get you there. Understand that if you are building a GLP-1 marketplace and you're competing against this guy, figure out how could you do more with less? How could you massively automate as much as you can? How could you be more nimble? How could you, you know, take out big chunks of cost? Or how could you use AI to do things that nobody thought was possible before? And if you're not willing to do some things that might look bold, risky, and scary, it's probably a good time to say sell. Yeah. Frankly, the market, public markets are at all-time highs. And you could argue that people always remember selectively when was the greatest time to sell. You know, 2021 multiples might have been higher than any time in human history. But it's a robust market right now. So now's a great time to be a seller or to do a recapitalization. And I would urge anybody that's an owner, you know, or CEO or leader to be thinking about that.
Mm. So, Ben, I'm going to come to you next. I'm going to pitch you on my fax machine spare part marketplace idea. We'll talk after the show. Does that sound like a plan, Ben?
Your fax machines are coming back.
Okay. Just like vinyl albums. Who knows? Who saw that coming?
Yeah.
Ben, excellent advice. Been there, done that. Very practical advice. And that one-person billion-dollar company, that is fascinating. I'm going to go check that out. A GLP-1 marketplace. All right. So, Wiley, I'm going to come back to you for your patent key takeaway in just a second, but I want to ask Ben just two more questions. We got the final advice. Ben touched on the new and exciting stuff going on at Cambridge Capital already. Also want to ask you about, Ben, your latest big deal at BGSA. We were talking about pre-show. Tell us more, Ben.
Well, sure. So a couple of things. Number one, BGSA has worked on over 50 transactions in the supply chain arena. We were engaged by a company called Idelic, which is a leader in SaaS solutions for driver safety and compliance. And so if you are a trucking company or a private fleet or anybody else that cares about driver safety and compliance, this is a big deal. Kind of like the green screens example, doing one thing great, being focused, very valuable, but at the end of the day, a point solution that belongs in a broader suite of solutions for someone that cares about compliance or safety or other adjacencies. And so ran a process, evaluated multiple options, talked to lots of buyers. In the end, the right buyer was Descartes. The reason Descartes was the winner, number one, large public company with the resources, but also number two, already doing a variety of things, you know, whether TMS, safety, compliance, or otherwise that add value to the same customers. So, you know, if you're doing 5 things for a customer and you could add the 6th thing, it's a lot easier to add that. Okay. And it's a huge cross-selling advantage. And, you know, I'm, I, I'm optimistic that Descartes is going to be able to create a lot of value with that, and you know, looking forward to to the next couple of years in their next chapter. So I think that's exciting. And then meanwhile, and I can't name names yet, but BGSA is also engaged for the sale of a high growth e-commerce fulfillment company. Great business, founded 6 years ago. It's on track to do 6 million plus of EBITDA this year, growing at over 50%. And it comes down to, an entrepreneur-led business with good technology, lean processes, great job focusing on customers, particularly consumer brands, mid-sized consumer brands, and a market that's consolidating. So That's attractive to larger e-com fulfillment companies. It's also attractive to other mid-sized companies that want to become national in scope. So you add a few locations and a few capabilities and make it happen. And it's also appealing to private equity firms that are excited about sponsoring consolidation. So there are a lot of other things happening at BGSA. And I'll mention one other, which is also working with a pretty interesting company in the realm of it's TMS adjacent software. Basically, they help global freight forwarders with pricing, quoting, RFPs, RFQs, kind of top of the funnel. So if you're a freight forwarder and you want to be able to grow, you got to be able to do a better job in those top of the funnel activities. Mm-hmm. What's great about that is they add value for those customers. They're not just, taking out process cost, but back to you can't shrink your rate of greatness. They're a tool for growth for these freight forwarders. And they serve 75% of the top 10. I'm not sure how that math works. I think it's because they're using like half of one company, but many of the top 10 freight forwarders are working with them. So a lot of interesting, exciting things at BGSA.
All right. Couple thoughts. First off, we're going to drop links to both Cambridge Capital and BGSA right there in the chat. Go check it out, folks. I bet Ben welcomes your industry conversations. Who knows other opportunities? Secondly, all math questions go to Wiley, Ben. So if that group wants to double check their math, all that goes to Wiley Jones. All right, so Wiley, Ben has shared a lot here, and we start to wrap here. There's a couple final things I want to get to. Number one, you're patented. This can be tough. You get the toughest question, Wiley, because Ben has shared, I've got about, 17 pages of notes here. What is your favorite takeaway from what the Ben Gordon has shared with us here today, Wiley?
That's really hard. Does anyone remember having to defrag their hard drives back in the day? I feel like that's what I'm doing to my brain right now. I think it's the Yogi Berra-ism. You got to keep the main thing, right? Make sure the main thing is the main thing. So my main thing for today's main thing is the main thing. And I would describe that you also have to take what Ben pointed out into account, which is you need to be integrating what's happening outside, pulling ideas from the market, pulling ideas from what your competitors are doing, pulling ideas from your own team, and consistently scrutinizing, am I correct? And are the things I truly believe about our main thing true? Executing with relentless focus. And then also understanding what game you want to play. And I think the point Ben made around, it's a great time to sell the business. Markets are at an all-time high. Think about your positioning, where you stand in the market. Is this a great time for me to actually take the people who have been competitors to me for the last number of bouts and actually turn them into partners? I think that's something that actually, even in our business, we've thought a lot about, where we actually changed the way that we positioned our product, and it helped massively accelerate growth for us by taking a product line that we had, stopping selling it, and instead going to our competitor and saying, we will now sell your product with you. Like really understanding what game you want to play and how you integrate that into making the main thing the main thing.
Outstanding, Wiley. And that t-shirtism, simplify, focus, execute. Love that from Ben Gordon. And I enjoyed, Wiley enjoyed your color commentary throughout. All right, so Ben Gordon, Cambridge Capital, BGSA, how can folks track you down, Ben?
Well, pretty easy to reach. You can go to the BGSA.com or CambridgeCapital.com sites, and you can email me, Ben, at either of those, Ben at BGSA.com or Ben at CambridgeCapital.com. You can also go to LinkedIn. I'm BenGordon18. It's my handle, and easy to find there. Or you can go to Twitter, and Benjamin H. Gordon is my handle there. And I can't promise complete answers to everything, but do my best to be responsive and accessible. And in particular, if you've got something that's a good fit for us, definitely please reach out. For BGSA, really, it's, you know, great companies that are looking for mergers, acquisitions, raising capital, recapitalizations, or otherwise, generally, you know, 5 to 100 million of EBITDA or 5 to 100 million of ARR software. And then on the Cambridge Capital side, similar size range, but, you know, business that's got tailwinds, technology or service leadership, a moat, and looking for a partner for growth or recapitalization or otherwise. So if you have ideas, love to hear them and love to be responsive.
Outstanding. Outstanding, Ben. We're going to drop those links. Reminds me of the movie Everywhere, All Things, All at Once. I think that was an Oscar winner at some point. That's Ben Gordon in a nutshell. All right. So, Wiley, let's make sure folks know how to connect with you and Team DOS, who is the ERP Evolved. You have an incredible 2026. I know you invite folks out there to go learn more at DOS.com, and you can take a demo. Don't take our word for it. Wiley, how would you suggest folks connect with you and the team?
Yeah, come through exactly like Ben said. Go to DOS.com, DOSS.com. Send us a note. We're all pretty active on LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn, Wiley Jones. Send me, you know, connect, send me a note. We love hearing from folks, especially as what Ben was describing, where companies are thinking about that next generation of workflow automation. They're thinking about the next generation system of record. They maybe don't want to continue to invest in, to put it in Ben's terms, a green screen that maybe they might be running on from, way back in the horse and buggy era. And a lot of that actually does look like for our business is helping transform the really sticky enterprise software that maybe they feel stuck in. So we spend a lot of time on that. And I have to say it is the single most fun thing that I hear on a weekly basis is, yeah, we have this mainframe running somewhere. How do we shut it off? And that's always a fun conversation.
I bet it is. Folks, reach out to Wiley at DOS.com. Again, book a demo. All right, so we're going to wrap here, but I got three resources I want to share. Starting with, you know, Ben talked about the value of outside-in thinking. And whenever I hear that phraseology, Laura Cesari is one of the first names that come to my mind. And on June 23rd, we're going to be featuring Supply Chains to Admire, listing the winners and sharing her new platform called Ask Laura. So come join us at 12 noon on June 23rd. And then after that, come join Wiley and the crew for a fireside chat focused on the retail entry playbook, navigating operational fundamentals. You're not going to miss that. And then finally, make sure you circle on your calendar. Circle his date, June 30th, because Wiley and the team are bringing Jindra Zytek. I hope I got that right. He's a partner and head of scale at Stripes. He's also a board member of a variety of organizations. He was former CSCO at HelloFresh, but he spent a ton of time in both operations and technology across global supply chain. Join us at 12 noon on June 30th. I bet he'll be almost as good as Ben. And of course, I'm kidding. But Ben brought it. I'm sure Jindra will as well. All right, we got to get out of here, folks. What a great hour and some change well spent with Ben Gordon, the one and only with Cambridge Capital. Ben, thank you so much for being here, my friend.
My pleasure and great to be with you.
And joining Ben and I today, of course, Wiley Jones and the DOS team. Wiley, always a pleasure. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Scott and Ben. This is a blast.
It is. I tell you, the hits keep on coming with this series. Big thanks to Wiley, Ashan, and the whole DOS team for partnering with us on Enterprise Unleashed. Amanda and Tricia behind the scenes, and Joshua, thanks so much. Appreciate all your work. Big thanks to our global audience out there. Come join us on June 30th at 12 noon. And whatever you do, Ben and Wiley both brought very actionable, proven perspective. Now it's in your hands, and you got a choice to make. What are you going to do with it, right? Deeds, not words, folks. Go take one thing you heard there from Ben and Wiley. Do something with it. Share it with your team. Action above anything else. Do one thing with it. And with all of that said, on behalf of the whole Supply Chain Now team, Scott Luton, challenge you. Do good. Give forward. Be the change that's needed. And we'll see you next time right back here on Supply Chain Now. Thanks, everybody.
Join the Supply Chain Now community for more supply chain perspectives, news, and innovation. Check out supplychainnow.com, subscribe to Supply Chain Now on YouTube, and follow and listen to Supply Chain Now wherever you get your podcasts.